Welcome to Groundworks. This is Jean Allert with the Samaritan Women. This episode, I expect, is going to appeal to maybe a dozen people across the United States because it's a very specialized topic. But for those individuals, I hope this is enormously helpful. What I'm going to talk about in this episode of Groundworks is the considerations that we had in selecting a property for our shelter program. Now, before I go into some of the considerations, let me give you a couple of caveats. First of all, you need to understand that we serve adult female victims of domestic sex trafficking. So I'm going to be looking at a property that accommodates adults, that I think is best for females, the occupancy that we think is most appropriate based on a staffing ratio is about 5 to 6 females to 1 staff person. And we're also looking at a re-entry program, so we're not as much geared towards a crisis level facility. So it's important that you understand those considerations. Let me also say that when the Samaritan Women got its first property, that was a property that literally the Lord just sort of put before us. And it was a very unusual property, an 1893 Victorian mansion. So in that experience, we didn't have a lot of say in what we were choosing or what the property amenities or layout of the home could be because it was historically protected. In our second property, the philanthropist who decided to buy it for us said that we needed to choose. So here we had to go through an exercise of coming up with what we really thought we needed for this next property. That's what I want to share with you today. First of all, we tend to favor the property being located in a residential setting. But residential, you got to really give some thought to what that means. For us, we like having a property in a neighborhood, in an area that is close to the amenities, whether it's within walking distance of a convenience store or a library or a rec center, that's a bonus. But we like the idea of being sort of hidden in plain sight, where there are people around, and so there are people who are just sort of naturally observant to what's going on. And it has a real homey feel. That's important to us. But it's also important to us that we be not too close to our neighbors, because the fact of the matter is that the population that we serve can be volatile. And so whether it's something like a group of women sitting out on the back porch smoking several times a day, or whether or not you have somebody who gets feeling some kind of way and she goes out in the front yard and makes a scene, or you have the unfortunate but unfortunately not that unusual situation of the ambulance or the police showing up. We did look at a property one time where the neighbors were literally right on top of us, and I thought, boy, after a while they're going to get sick and tired of seeing, you know, some kind of activity going on at this house, and then we're not going to be considered a good neighbor. So I would say close, but not too close. Be sure to check your zoning very carefully, because depending upon the neighborhood that you might choose, they may have a limit on the number of people who can live in a house. They may have covenants on how the property has to be maintained, and you're going to have to respect all of those things. Again, it's so important that if you're going to be in a neighborhood setting, that you be a good neighbor. We think it's important to have some level of fencing, but fencing has very little to do with security. It has more to do for us with privacy. Because our women will do things like, I want to go out and go tanning in the backyard. And that's kind of awkward when you have 4 or 5 women laying in the backyard in bathing suits. Or if you have a situation where you have people who are arriving to your property at odd hours of the day, it's good if you have a little bit of privacy. I always look to see if there's fencing and whether or not the driveway allows the fence to somewhat protect what cars are there. It's very infrequent that we will have an actual squad car that will come to our location, but it is a good idea if you can keep that hidden from your neighbors if need be. We look for a property that has some yard space because it's good to get outside. Every once in a while, the girls got to get away from each other. And if you can go outside and play some volleyball or softball or something like that, that's fantastic. We particularly like it if there's a separate garage or a shed that can be locked, because we want to keep away all of those items that are dangerous, whether that's the lawnmower and gasoline or motor oil, turpentine, any of those kinds of things, whether they're flammable or inhalants, whether they are tools that are dangerous. It's just good if all of your maintenance items can be kept out of the main household and locked up in a separate facility. So now let's think about the house itself. And again, I'll just say that these are just some of the considerations that we go through. If you're going to serve a smaller or larger population, or you're going to serve minors, you may have different considerations. We look for a property that has at least two entrances, because we may have a very different feel to who's coming to the property. If we are a disclosed location and we allow our residents to have visitors, we want to have a separate entrance for them than what we might use for somebody who is referring a client, for example. So two entrances is a good idea, and it's always good from a fire safety perspective as well. So now I'm going to go room by room and just give you some thoughts. These may apply to you or not, but they're just some considerations. As far as a living room is concerned, gosh, I don't know how many people use a living room anymore. But if you are going to be a disclosed location where you will allow for things like family visits or attorneys, law enforcement, social worker, somebody who may come and visit your client, I think it's a good idea to cordon off, or at least visually partition, your living room area as separate from the rest of the house. If the layout of the house keeps that at a different quadrant, that's really a good idea. We'll also use the living room during downtime for groups. So we tend to furnish it in a very comfortable kind of modular furniture or sectional type of ways, so that we can move the furniture around as the groups would warrant. I think it's very important to look for a home that has some kind of den, because you're going to want to have an office, and you're going to want to have it lockable. That might be used as a counseling room, or it might be your business office. But it's so important that you have a place where you can have your files, and you can have meetings, and you can have those private discussions that always come up in a way that is somewhat separate. We were very fortunate in our second facility that the laundry room was able to be converted into an office, and then it also had a half bath adjacent to it. So we were able to keep that separate from the rest of the house. The dining room, well, I guess that depends on what kind of a environment you want to create. We think that family dining, or dining together as a group, is really important to the enculturation of the ladies, and so we look for a separate dining room so that we can literally say, you're going to go set the table, we're going to go sit in this room, we're going to clear the dining room table, and it feels more like an occasion, and that helps us a great deal sociologically. Now then there's the kitchen, and oh my goodness, there is a lot to be said about the kitchen. I don't know if a kitchen could ever be big enough. Again, because I said that an occupancy that we'd be looking at would be about a 5 or 6 to 1 ratio. So let's assume there are 6 people living in the house, 5 of your clients, and then 1 full-time supervisor or house mother, however you think of that. So you're going to need enough room to imagine that at least half of those people are in the kitchen, and in some cases, all of those people are in the kitchen at any one time. One of the considerations that most of us don't consider, and when you look at modern homes in particular, where they create these wide open spaces where the kitchen is really the center of the house and it's very sort of atrium in its format, that can be quite problematic for our population, because as you will learn, some of our women are really struggling with eating disorders. They may have a lot of problems with food and irregular eating patterns, and that's something that you're going to want to work on. So I know of agencies that actually will lock up the kitchen. And so they'll only make the kitchen available during particular hours because what they're trying to do is get the women onto a regular eating schedule. So consider whether or not you're going to be an agency that locks up the whole kitchen. In that case, you're not going to want one of these modern layouts. You definitely want a pantry, and you want a pantry that you can lock up. One of the things that is a sad reality is that you will experience these women hoarding food, women who have, again, eating disorders, who may binge and purge, and there's just some aspect of the food that you're going to want to lock up. If you allow the women to buy their own food or the special treats that they want, whether that's soda, candy, whatever, you will find that at some point you need to monitor and sort of amortize how much of that they consume. So consider whether or not the pantry is something that is lockable or whether or not there's a room that you could convert into a pantry that would allow you to lock. Some organizations that I know actually even lock the refrigerator and they will lock the cabinetry. That might be in the case of somebody, residents that you may have that are cutters and you want to lock up all the sharps in the house. So you want to make sure that the cabinetry that's in the kitchen is something that you can put lock units on so that you can say, this is the knife drawer and we lock this up at the end of every meal. So that is where we really have a deviation between sort of the modern kitchen or the idea of the kitchen as the hub of the household. For us, frankly, the kitchen is something that presents some real challenges. We want it to be a social space, but we also want it to be a safe space. We think it is essential that you find a property that gives you an evident area where you can call, well, what we call our information station. Here we put up a big whiteboard, a calendar, a bulletin board, and this is where the women go every day to find out what's the programming for that day. Are there any schedule changes? They get their individual schedules. They are able to see any announcements, anything that's coming up. It allows them to begin to do some time management, some programming, thoughts about how they schedule their day. And it's all in one place where you also have the advantage of saying, well, it was on the calendar and we all knew about it. So we call it an information station. You'll call it whatever works for you. But do think about a central place where you can say, here's where you get stamps. Here's where you can pick up pens and paper. Here's where you can find out what's going on. I like it if we find a property where we can have a separate room. Oftentimes it'll end up being what is the family room of a traditional property, but we will turn that into a library or an education room. That might be the place where they can do their studies, have tutors. If you allow for TV, that might be a good place for that. So now let's assume that you have something like a rancher or something that has multiple levels. I'm not suggesting one configuration or another, although I will say that I particularly like a split level format just because I like the way it separates the congregational space from the sleeping space. So let's talk a little bit about the sleeping space. For the staff bedroom, which in many cases ends up being the master bedroom, we do think it is really important that you look for a master bedroom that also has its own master bath. There's something about just maintaining the boundaries with that level of intimacy from the staff person to the residents, that she has her own showering space and she can keep her own toiletries, and there's not a co-mingling of those things. The boundaries are so important. In our facilities, the staff are able to lock their rooms, and that's not out of any mistrust necessarily, but it actually helps the staff feel better about whatever personal items they might have in their room. Now, we have an interesting configuration when it comes to medication, because in one situation, we have the medication available in a separate room, and then in another facility, we have the medication available in the staff room. Frankly, I don't like the latter because I like keeping the staff room private from the rest of the residents. But you'll just have to determine for yourself what kind of culture and environment you want to create. As far as the bedrooms are concerned, the only advice that I could give you is try to look for a property that makes the bedrooms as equitable as possible, preferably the same size, the same amount of closet space, the same amount of amenities. So if you're looking at a historic property and, you know, two of them have fireplaces and turrets and elegant balconies, that's lovely for the individuals who will be in those rooms. But for the one who is in the room that has no fireplace, no turret, no balcony, no windows, you will create an inequity that frankly is not worth your time. So look for a property that gives you the most homogeneity across those bedrooms. So now I want to talk a little bit about other amenities and other thoughts. And this is going to be just a grab bag of ideas, but I want to throw out just some lessons learned. We think it's real important to have a space in the house, whether it's the garage or the basement, but a place where they can be messy. And what I mean by that is if you're going to do art therapy or you're just going to allow them to do crafts or they can leave out a puzzle and it's okay, there needs to be just some area in the house where they can just relax and be a little casual, maybe a little messy. For us, we have two different scenarios depending upon our property. Now, we tend to be an organization that's very low on television. We have very minimal television that we allow. If you take a lot of gals from incarceration, or if they've been in foster care, they may be acclimated to watching a tremendous amount of television during the day. That's not our emphasis, and so we really downplay there being televisions in every room. We actually only allow one for education purposes, and then there's one television that's available for recreational movies, etc., and they have time limits on when they can be used. One of the things that I think a lot of people don't consider in looking for a facility for this kind of work is how much storage you're actually going to need. I cannot emphasize this enough. If you are so fortunate as to have community support, you are going to get clothing, toiletries, shoes, feminine products, Christmas decorations. It's just going to keep coming, and you're going to wonder, where am I going to put all this stuff? Because you don't want to give it up because you're economizing, but by the same token, you've got to find a place to put it. So in our second facility, we really looked for a property that had ample storage. Now, you're going to want to think through that storage, whether or not only the staff has access to that storage or whether or not your clients have access to the storage. Here's what I mean by illustration. We have one property where the major storage room, you have to walk through the staff room to get there. Well, we're not going to put things in that storage room that the residents don't, they're not allowed to access. So I don't want them walking through the staff room in order to get to the those particular items. So storage is just a huge consideration. You've got to thoughtfully consider, where are you going to put linens? Where are you going to put surplus supplies, whether that's everything from toiletries to light bulbs to cleaning products? And then where are you going to put the surplus of those products? Storage is also really important to consider, where the lady's going to put their stuff. Do not think conservatively about this. Even though you set the rules and you say that a gal can come in with only two bags, you're going to get somebody who's going to show up with six bags of stuff because she just had to have it. I kid you not, I've had women who've come in with 6 foot long pillows because that's her comfort pillow. Or she likes to knit, and so she's brought 8 bags of yarn. Or she happens to be just a hoarder of a cleansing products, and she likes to have a different scent every day, so she showed up with 40 different body washes. And at some point, you're going to have to say, either that stuff is not allowed in the house, or you've got some supplemental storage for where it's going to go. The other thing that tends to happen is that over the time that the ladies are with you or your minors or whatever population you're serving, people give them things. and you receive additional donations and gifts, and or they go out and buy things and they begin to accumulate, whether they're accumulating things for their future apartment or whether or not they're just hoarding items because this is a new experience. You're going to have to set some strong parameters about how much she can keep in her room and what supplemental storage you have available. Somewhere on the property, you're going to want to have a safe. And this is for everything from locking up any money that she wants you to hold for her, if she has valuables, certainly if you keep petty cash, anything like that where you're going to want to lock that up. You're going to need probably dual security, meaning a safe itself, but then the safe is in a locked facility. So while I'm on that topic, a couple thoughts about security. People ask us what we do in terms of physical security of the property. What we have learned in serving adult females is that the larger problem is not somebody coming here and invading the property, but the ladies going out, returning to some relationship or some other attraction out in the world. And so in our properties, we make sure that the first floor or anything that has a walkout exit has a security device on it. Oftentimes something like a window can only open 6 inches before an alarm goes off. So that gives you the freedom of having the fresh air, but it also puts the protection in place about anything that would open past that. We have all of our doors and windows on a security system that would notify the supervisors if there's been any compromise to that system. Now you're going to have to do a careful walkthrough of the property that you're considering to see if there's walkout capability from a second floor or third floor. Sometimes a roof line can be very accessible. I would strongly recommend that you contact a law enforcement professional and have that individual walk through the property with you and tell you where you have compromises so that you can spend your money wisely. One of the things that we tend to look at properties, I guess, and we get sort of enamored by new properties or things that look sort of open and spacious, but here's where we have to think outside of ourselves. If you walk into, you know, your sort of McMansion of today, you're going to see this wide open loft space, maybe a big balcony that overlooks a family room. And you walk in there and you think, wow, this is really nice. I'm going to be able to see where everybody is. It's open. And it may be absolutely terrifying to her. It may be way too much space. She may be anxious about the fact that if she's in the family room, then somebody can hear her up, you know, on the second floor. So it's a tender balance between that openness and that disclosure and also the safety. And the other sad reality is that when you have things like lofts and balconies and sometimes those loft ceilings, you have to think about the suicide potential in any of those, or at a minimum, the drama potential. So if somebody's standing up on the balcony and they are threatening to jump, you're going to have to just unfortunately think through those kinds of scenarios and what your safety parameters are going to be. A lot of people look at carpeting as if that should reduce the noise and create a warmer environment, and that may be true, but I'm going to tell you that we have learned that carpeting is not our friend. We would much rather have throw rugs, rugs that can go in the wash, rugs that we can replace as need be. For a variety of reasons. If you're an emergency shelter, you have to anticipate things like accidents, biological accidents, you know, and just faulty, you know, clumsy accidents. And so you're probably going to get a lot of spills. You may get a lot of people, you know, if you've got people right out of recovery, you might get them in detoxing. It's just a mess. And so we have found that going with something like a hardwood or a tile, it's also much easier to clean in the long run. And here's an added benefit that most of us don't think about. We think about carpeting the staircase in a two-story or three-story facility. I'm going to tell you, if you found a facility that you like, take the carpeting off the staircase because you can hear footprints on a hardwood a whole lot better than you can on carpet. And that's just an additional protection that's going to be important. Now, sometimes people also get excited because they say, wow, we're going to put these survivors in this facility. We want to try to give them as much as possible. So we're going to look for a facility that has a jacuzzi or a facility that has a pool. And in some areas, maybe, you know, out on the West Coast, most of the houses have those amenities. And so it's hard to find a property that doesn't have them. Know that you are incurring the maintenance of those additional amenities, and you're also incurring the risk. Don't assume that all of your clients are going to know how to swim. Don't assume they're going to know how to use those amenities wisely. And know that something like a jacuzzi could be a source of great contention amongst your residents. And so I would just advise that if you have a property that you absolutely love and it meets all your other criteria and it happens to have a jacuzzi or a hot tub or a pool or something like that, put some strident rules around the use of those additional amenities and stick to them. So that's all I have in terms of just trying to give you an array of considerations as you're walking through looking at different properties. From the outside to the inside, consider the use. I strongly recommend that what you do is run through a day in the life. What is your program? And run through that day and see how people will move through the house throughout the course of that day. Variety is good. They have to get up and get moving and be in different venues, you know, throughout the day if you're going to keep them all in one facility. Also, go through the scenario of what's intake going to look like. What room are you going to receive the client in? Where can you entertain visitors? What if she's having a meeting? What if she needs confidentiality? What if somebody's having an outburst or a meltdown and you need to separate them from everybody else? How are you going to let them be messy? How are you going to let them be in communion with each other? So walk through the property repeatedly with these different scenarios in mind and try to imagine what is going to be the flow of living in that house before you sign on any kind of dotted line. I hope that this podcast has been helpful to you. I realize it's been a stream of consciousness and a little bit more casual than most of the podcasts, but for the 12 of you that will find it useful, I hope that you find it very useful. Thank you, and I hope you continue to join us in doing this groundwork. God bless you.
Thank you for listening. Learn how to subscribe to our groundwork series by visiting our website at www.thesamaritanwomen.org.